Rehab interview chairs this morning Congressman John Larson, Carl Bard. He is the former Connecticut Department of Transportation Deputy Commissioner and the current co-chair of the legislature's Transportation Committee, State Representative Tony Guerrero. Now, we're talking about a solution for the capital city. I-84, I-91, the tunnel, the viaduct that Congressman Larson has been pursuing, a plan that's been out there for a while. But, Congressman, we left off with Mike in West Hartford, and it's a sentiment I've heard expressed in other arenas, too, where they like this plan, but it comes down to the credibility issue with our leaders. So address that.
Well, I think Tony Guerrero said it best here. What's going to happen with the federal monies is that those monies have to go for transportation purposes. Otherwise, you don't get the federal money. It's that simple. And so one of the reasons that you overcome this concern that monies will be sent to the states and then the states would use them to balance their budgets, that can't happen under the new federal legislation that's been enacted. And so I think the citizens should be relieved about that. And as Tony indicates, and we were saying earlier, you know, everybody wants to go to heaven. Nobody wants to die. Nobody wants to pay for anything. But at some point, you know, you can't burden future generations. And what this represents is a pay-as-you-go opportunity. And when we say pay-as-you-go, not only for the initial construction phase, but the ongoing maintenance so that you make sure that the integrity is there. And as the chairman pointed out, you can't get the federal funding if the money isn't dedicated to those purposes. So we think that that's a strong move on the part of the federal government. Now, where Tony is skeptical, and the governor has been as well, is that the federal government hasn't been forthcoming. In fact, they've shorted the transportation budget. So that's their concern, is that will the federal government be able to come up with the trillion-dollar program that the president and certainly Bill Schuster, myself, and others are out there pushing, because we need this to rebuild the country.
Just also mention Bill Schuster again.
Bill Schuster is the Republican chairman of transportation. He's been here no less than six times. And again, listen, I think one thing that the listeners should take heart in also is that this is an area that we're working across party lines to come up with solutions, because, as Bill said, look at highways, roads, bridges, broadband, railroads, deep harbors, airports. They're not Democrat or Republican. They're American. And this is what we need to do to put the country back to work.
And that is the economy.
That is the economy. And the circular flow of goods and services that will flow from that, and as Tony said, the spillover effect into the region and our other suburbs that surround Hartford and East Hartford, this will transform the region. All it takes is a little vision and a little push to make sure, and I commend Chairman Schuster for this, and frankly, President Trump for being aggressive about a trillion-dollar infrastructure program.
He wants to do it.
He does.
You know,
yeah.
I would be remiss if I didn't mention the fact that sewer and water are also in that.
Thank you. Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
Talk about that.
Well, exactly. Sewer and water, and it goes on. I mean, and broadband, too.
Yeah.
We forget about that.
Well, people need to recognize, first of all, something needs to be done. Is it fair to say, because there's a notion out there that, well, why are we spending our money on this? Well, let's come to the realization, something needs to be done.
Got to be done.
I mean, talk about our infrastructure, Carl. You've been on the front lines over the years.
Yeah, interesting. As a transportation engineer, every project we touch every single utility. So I have a lot of history with tearing them up and moving them around. And then after spending 7.5 years with the Metropolitan District, focusing primarily on sewer and water, which is why I brought it up. But in both of those cases, clearly the transportation industry needs, if nothing else, maintenance money. They are so far behind on trying to maintain what we have. And that doesn't even begin to address the capacity issues. And I'm talking not just highways, all modes. And what's interesting about the Connecticut DOT, it's probably the only truly multimodal DOT in the country, because it has water, rail, public transportation, airports, roads and bridges, and you don't find that. Did I mention the state pier?
Yes, you should.
And the oldest continuing operating ferry service in the country. Yeah. So anyways, I mean, when you look at all of the demands on just that from a maintenance perspective, and then in the, as the Congressman pointed out, in the future, what are we going to do? You have to start talking about where are your opportunities for capacity improvements. And I think that's one of the reasons this interchange is such an interesting concept, is that not only does it address the future needs, along with, and I will give the DOT a lot of credit in this regard, they're looking for relief for that whole movement from 84, 691, Charter Oak Bridge, with a redevelopment there. So,
now, let me just ask you, can you folks, okay, with this plan, with this tremendous plan, which Dan and I think is, I mean, we've got to do it. We've got to do it. Can we get this thing moving? The trouble is people get frustrated because it takes so long. Can you start it? Can it be started within a year? Can it be started within a year and a half? I mean, how does it look, Congressman?
Well, let's hope that we take up an infrastructure package this year. And in that first tranche of money within the infrastructure package would be money to design and build. And that's what we're, that's what our goal is, so that we could begin that process as early as next year if we get the funding through. And now we anticipate, there's been no infrastructure bill that's come forward yet, but we anticipate that that's going to come later this summer or early part of fall of this year. And certainly, you know, we really feel strongly that we need an infrastructure plan. We think it ought to be funded as well. I mean, I am a strong believer in a carbon tax nationwide. I think that that would provide us more than enough funding to do the infrastructure thing without burdening any future generation, and provides us an opportunity to take care of impacted coal miners, secure their pensions, provide for their transition, help out consumers with any kind of spike that would take place within the energy cycle, but most importantly, provide the opportunity for future research into energy sources and the wherewithal to have a funding stream that can't just solely be reliant on a gas tax, especially as you see automobiles evolving, getting more efficient, battery run, electric cars, et cetera, all changing the face the way we are. We've got to get out front of the next generation of change, and that's why I think we need to have a source that will provide a steady revenue stream that will provide that opportunity, and that's what we're going to continue to push. And we've got bipartisan agreement on that, too. We're working with a congressman from Oklahoma on that issue as well.
Okay, well, Brett, speaking of cars.
Okay, let's take a break.
Brett, we've got calls, 888-574-2723. Let's go to Mark. Good morning, Mark.
Hey, good morning. I understand this might be a different format when I could be able to go back and forth. Hey, Congressman Larson, how are you doing?
Great.
Hey, listen, in order to make our decisions in the present time or in the future, I always look at the past about our bad decisions. And, you know, I look at plans. My father told me a long time ago to always pay attention to government waste and decisions, and I've always done that. So in my 20s, I started paying attention to DOT and decisions made, and I think you were a big proponent of the HOV lane. Am I correct?
No, I was not. But
well, in the middle
I
of the
HOV lanes at the time made an awful lot of sense.
Okay, but you got to remember, back to us in the 80s, it did look great on paper, didn't it? We were going to have commuter parking lots up and down the corridor. We were going to have Connecticut Transit buses going to the parking lots picking up people. Well, that failed. Then we went to Easy Street vans. That failed. We used to let people with four or more riders in the lane use it. That failed. We went to three or more, two or more. In the middle of the extension, in 2000, you actually went to the feds and said, could we make it a single-use lane? This was in the middle of another extension that was going to cost us tens of millions of dollars. I don't know what happened in the past 17 years if you just dropped the ball.
Well, Mark, what's your question, Mark?
My question is, if all these things that we were told are going to be so great, look at just recently the fast track. Every time we're presented something that's going to ease the pain of congestion and get things moving, everything's been a failure.
my opinion, Mark, with you, it just seems every time that we, you know, have conversation, that it's very difficult to sell you anything. This is something that what we are doing is putting a plan out, because we're definitely going to have to do this. There's no question about it. We're going to have to do this to survive. This is different than other plans, but this is one that we're going to have to survive, no question.
I think we have to come to the recognition that something needs to be done, right?
It has to be.
And
it
something is going to, that's the other point. Something is going to be done. Either we're going to do it incrementally into Mark's frustration, as things have been done in the past. DOT is operating under the best information that it has incrementally, and it's moving ahead given all the environmental constraints, given all the constraints and concerns of residents and citizens that everybody voices, or we're going to move ahead with a 100-year vision instead of a 15-year vision that will maybe ease the problem temporarily but doesn't come up with a solution. What we're looking at is a long-term 100-year solution that, as Brad and Tony and all of us have said, you know, we probably won't be here. Well, maybe Brad will be here, but to see that happen. But we owe it to the future in terms of coming up with a program that will both reconnect both sides of the river to both communities, East Hartford and Hartford, to the riverfront. Allow the city of Hartford, that's been divided by the Aetna Viaduct, to be reconnected, to be able to repurpose our bridges to what they were intended to be, and create livable, accessible communities on both sides of the river, and take the through traffic, what was once intended for a beltway around the city that was never built, and put it in a vertical solution underground, 70 feet underground, and connect the interchange, which was designed and connected over the Buckley Bridge to accommodate Beatrice Fox Auerbach, and instead look at a long-term vision that would line it up more directly with the Charter Oak Bridge and line up 84 almost in a straight line from the Robert Street exit out to Flatbush Avenue in Hartford. Now, that's a long-term vision, and yes, well, people might be skeptical about that. I can understand, but at some point, you either have to believe in the engineering capability and what people present you, and over time, people present you with a lot of theories and ideas. I'm not an engineer. I'm a legislator, and when someone comes and they present a good idea and you say, okay, this is the best thinking at the time, you go with it. Sometimes it works, and to your point, sometimes it hasn't. But you continue to work towards coming up with solutions that will be long-term and in the best economic interest of the area. We think this is.
Okay. Well, we've got to do something.
Well, I don't think there's any doubt about that. Something's going to be done, but the thing is to get it right. Let's go to Steve in New Britain. Steve, welcome to the show.
You know, I came across...
Go ahead.
Hello.
Go ahead.
Yes. Hello?
Yes.
Am I on?
Yes, yes. Go ahead.
Oh, okay. With all due respect, my brother lives in Utah, which is run by conservative Republicans. They have incredibly low taxes. It's an incredibly business-friendly environment. And Connecticut is directly the opposite. If you want to get Connecticut going, you get rid of the state income tax, you cut taxes here, and you go the opposite of all these Democrats have done for the last 20 or 30 years here. And I'm definitely not in favor of a countrywide carbon tax. That is ridiculous. And a carbon tax is not going to help the pensions of the coal workers. It's going to put the coal workers out of business. More taxes are not the solution to any of the problems.
All right,
Steve,
Steve, and you know what? The congressman will address that issue, but understand, something needs to be done with I-91, I-84, something dramatic. What should we do?
I don't know, but the answer is not a carbon tax and not more taxes. I agree with you. Something has to be done, but I don't know. I don't know. I mean, the reason Connecticut is in this mess is because of the high taxes and the way the Democrats have run this state.
Hey, How are you going to pay for I-84, I-91? You said something needs to be done, but you don't know. How are we going to pay for it?
I don't know. There must be other solutions.
There's not another solution. We've got to face the bullet. We really do.
Well, how did we get in this whole situation, Brad? How did we get here?
I mean, part of the problem is your wear and tear. I mean, you know, you build a house tomorrow. Eventually, that house is...
traveling on our roadways today is astronomical. Yeah. Remember, when we built this infrastructure, it was back in the 50s and in the 60s where homes had one car. Yeah. Today, an average family has four cars sitting in their driveway. And as the congressman said, we got 260,000 vehicles traveling on that little piece of roadway.
And we're not even talking about the trucks.
There you go. So how do we resolve this?
Okay, callers, hang in there because we're coming up on a break, Brad.
Yep. Coming up to 7:30, and the phones are all lit up like a Christmas tree here this morning. So we're going to get to you. We're going to get to you, and we're delighted to have the special guests that we have here. And we're just going to talk sense, that's all, because we've got to do these things. We've got to do them. 7:30 in the morning. We'll be back right after the news.
Glastonbury Center to the East Hartford 84. It merges from two lanes to one. There's long backups. I had a friend coming from up at Day Hill Road and where she works now, and she was trying to get home, and it took her 2 hours a couple months ago.
Wow.
So I think people don't realize that we have 400,000 people on the east side of the river in a million-person metropolitan region, and everything goes through one bridge, basically. You know, you can't get to the Charter Oak Bridge from Route 2. You can't, the Founders Bridge, if you're not going downtown, everybody else has to be on the Bulkley Bridge. And I follow lots of people going from Glastonbury or South Windsor all the way to Farmington or out to Southington.
And we've had that for years.
We've had it for years.
For years.
And I think we have to forget that these were designed in the 40s, right, built in the 50s, with a population of 400,000 people or thereabouts, mostly in downtown Hartford, or mostly in the city of Hartford. And all the towns around have spread out, and we're double, almost triple the size. So I know everybody's leaving Connecticut, but a whole lot of people have come here and call it home now.
Let's go back to the phones. Who do we have on the line at 888-574-2723? Leon in Naugatuck. Good morning, Leon.
Leon, good morning.
Good morning, Brad. Your guests are either ill-informed or being disingenuous about trucks not paying when they go through this state. Have you ever heard of apportioned plates? Every truck that goes through the state either has to have an apportioned plate.
Yes.
Or it has to have a permit. And then there's a little sticker called IFTA, Interstate Federal Tax Authority. And we have to log where we buy fuel, and we have to buy the fuel proportionately, or we are penalized again.
That's right. Yeah, as a matter of fact, I know Mr. Riley pretty well. I've chatted with him over the years. And I would have to agree with you that there is, a misconception out of the fact that the truckers do, in fact, pay a national tax in its proportion to the states so that they don't get away scot-free.
Well, you just said the trucks go through the state, beat up the roads, and they don't pay a penny. That's just not true.
No, I didn't say that.
We didn't say that.
I said trucks go on the road, but I never said trucks don't pay to be on the road.
Well, I wish you would. I heard it specifically. They don't pay a cent. That was the words that were said.
Well, I didn't say them.
I hear over and over and over and over, and it's false.
You didn't hear it.
You go back and pull the tape on your program. About a half hour ago, you said that.
You know what, Leon? We're really arguing stuff that isn't the component to the story. The component of the story is it's falling apart.
What do we do about it?
Well, the thing of it is, if they spent the money that they got for the transportation fund in the proper way, the roads would be properly funded. But they have not done so, and I don't believe they will do so in the future.
The solution, then, is to just let it crumble.
Well, you should find a way to force the legislatures to spend the money according to what they collected it for.
They told you that. They've got a lockbox. If you use money if you collect tolls, that money has to specifically go towards infrastructure. I mean, what more of a guarantee do you want?
Okay, first of all, it's infrastructure. It's not transportation. That would be sewers. That would be all kinds of things other than roads or high-speed bus lanes or high-speed rail systems like they're doing in my home state in California, which are an absolute mess.
Ask you just a simple question, and you are a trucker.
No, I have one truck, and I get audited, and you wouldn't believe what I go through. I have one truck that's over 26,000 pounds. And to go and say, and we have to prove that we bought fuel in the states that we go through.
Do you think that's the right thing to do?
Well, I don't mind it being done, but to sit there and say the trucks don't pay, and I'm telling you, I heard it.
All right, Leon, thanks for the call. Going around in circles here, that doesn't solve the problem about what we need to do with the infrastructure. And I think, Carl, you bring some interesting points to the table about the population. Yeah, we hear about people moving out of Connecticut, but it has tripled since these roads were built back in the 1950s. There's just too many cars for the road. The infrastructure is falling apart. So the question is, what do we do about it? Now, Congressman, what plans are on the table right now besides yours? Are there any other plans?
In Congress, there are several plans that exist in terms of how we're going to fund the infrastructure program. But right now, Chairman Schuster is working on a major infrastructure plan that he hopes to bring forward. He's been meeting with the White House. As I said, he's going to be back up here in September.
Now, would this supersede what's already on the table as far as Congressman Schuster?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
I mean, there's the regular transportation budget, in which, as we indicated before, the federal government has not been funding it. It's been underfunding budgets to all the states, which causes them to then scrimp and save. And if you talk to the road builders and other individuals, all whom, by the way, have heard about this program and are wholeheartedly supporting it because they understand the economic development behind it. They understand the ease of transportation. They understand that a REMI study will produce all the economic development that will occur in the area and the relief of the congestion and then taking the through traffic, you know, which was tended to go around the beltway years ago. Now we're going to go under the ground and into tunnels, which will eliminate a lot of that traffic that comes in and out of the city of Hartford. As we said earlier, the Buckley Bridge currently, that interchange takes 264,000 vehicles. That's when you consider that the George Washington Bridge takes about 324,000, you get the picture of how that congestion, and as Chip described it, the bottleneck that occurs around the Buckley Bridge. And for all the other reasons we mentioned, we can't afford to shut down the city of Hartford for 2 years. And we do need to reunite the city in a way that makes it more livable and accessible to its riverfront. And we have a great city to show off here and a great opportunity for people to come here, to work here, and ultimately to live here. And I think this will transform the region in terms of both economic development, ease of transportation that's intermodally connected as well by bus, by train, by airport, deep harbor, bike, walkability, livability. This is what the goal is.
Now, if it started soon,
right,
it's going to take years. We know that.
Right.
But there will be improvements all along. Is that correct?
That's correct. There'll be improvements all along. And most importantly, Brad, you wouldn't have to shut down the city of Hartford while you were doing those improvements. Because what we're looking at here is a turnkey operation. Because the work is going to be done 70 feet underground. And that's where the tunnel will be located. And how do we know, and Carl mentioned this early, the MDC is in the process of building a 4.5-mile tunnel that's 120 feet underground. And they've already done the geological tests on this, et cetera. The region is ideal to accomplish this because of, well, I like to say this term, because of Jurassic basalt that's located underneath that area. And, you know, think about the Trinity area and that basalt that you see coming out. You can visually see it as you're going along the highway. So this is probably the best kind of rock to drill in for tunneling and we're blessed that geologically we have it in this region.
Wow. Yeah, I want to touch on one thing that the congressman brought up, and that's the Remy study, because it's really unique in the transportation industry. Years ago, you had a transportation plan put together, and it was really based on how you recognize traffic patterns going forward. And we started talking about this maybe 6-9 months ago, that with the various alternatives we have on the table for improving the area or the system in Hartford, we said, the private sector does this on every single project. They don't put a shovel in the ground without doing this. And we said, we really should take a moment and look at this long term and see what the global prospects of a project like this would be, and as far as, you know, how radically would it change the environment in the city. I think intuitively you kind of know that, but long term, it's nice to have something that said, yeah, we looked at it, and here's the economic impacts of this and the socioeconomics. And I think that keeps getting lost in the conversation, that the city has been fighting this battle between over the fact that they cut the city in half 35 years ago. And it's really had a very deleterious effect on the city. So if you can improve that, to me, in my mind, and having built a lot of stuff over the years, I'm thinking, man, this is such an opportunity. It would really change the way Hartford is perceived for a very long time.
14 minutes before the hour of 8 o'clock, and hear an awful lot about it in the media over the next few months. And, again, as Dan said earlier, and I agree with him 100%, we've got to start. We've got to start talking about it, and there's going to be many disagreements. I understand all of these things, but I think that we've got to present ideas that are going to work for the future. And we won't be here in the end when it's all done, years down the road, but at least we will be able to look at ourselves and say, hey, we didn't quit. We came up with something. It was controversial at the start, but it really isn't controversial. It is really something that all of us can gain.
You know, Brad, disagreement is healthy, and because it helps you work through questions that you might not have thought about, et cetera. But at the end of the day, if you're not about a solution, if you're calling in and you say, well, we're just against it, well, it's easy to be against something. It's easy to be for something, frankly. But you have to have something that's ultimately workable, and that's what I appreciate about this opportunity here this morning.
Well, I think what we need to recognize, first of all, and what the public needs to recognize, is something needs to be done.
Right.
So the question now becomes, is this a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to really get it done right? Yes or no?
It is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, transportation-wise especially, because these opportunities don't come by that often. There's not going to be another major trillion-dollar infrastructure project. So if we're not prepared and ready to go, then
it's not going to happen.
According to a new federal audit, Medicare erroneously